It is time for your KDNK local newscast for this Friday morning, December 9th. I'm Steve Cole, live from the heart of Carbondale's Creative District. Standing Rock Sioux Tribal Chairman David Archambault has asked that water protectors at the North Dakota camps return home. The Indigenous Environmental Network supports this, as well as those who are staying put. KDNK's Amy Haddon-Marr spoke with IEN's Jade Begay for an update.
Talk about sort of the mood at camp.
The size has reduced, which makes sense because, you know, a lot of people came here with winter tents, you know, like camping tents, not a wall tent or a structure that can hold up to 50-mile winds or these kinds of temperatures. So a lot of people have left and are continuing to leave. And that's also because people are respecting the request of the chairman, Dave Archambault. However, you know, for the folks that are here still, the mood is strong. You know, everyone is hunkered down and, you know, looking out for each other. There's crews going around the camp making sure everyone's structures are safe and their wood stoves are safe and they have enough water and food. And I think the world is really wanting all of these decisions to come from camp. You know, they want to know what's next and, you know, what's the next strategy. And, you know, here at camp, we're kind of prioritizing survival. We're in survival mode and we need to take care of ourselves and each other before we can give answers to what the plans are, what the big picture is.
What is the law enforcement presence like out there right now?
The barricade on the bridge is still there. And that's one of the reasons why people are choosing to stay, because, you know, the mentality is like once you're committed to moving that barricade on the bridge, then we can go home. Once DAPL moves their equipment, we can go home. Folks on the ground here are still pretty steadfast in those commitments.
Are you all still being bombarded with sound cannon?
No. I mean,
or lights, all-night lights and helicopters and planes flying overhead?
We haven't seen any helicopter air traffic over the past couple of days, probably because they can't fly. The winds have just been so heavy and so strong. The lights are still on, faced towards camp night and day. The barricade is still on the bridge, and police are still parked along the hills and near the bridge. We wonder why. Why are they still here if they're not going to be drilling, or if the easement has been denied? It's a mystery, especially since today Energy Partner Transfers has said that they're not going to drill illegally.
So Energy Transfer Partners said that they will not drill illegally?
Yes.
It sounds like there's been sort of a drawdown of people at camp.
Yeah, I would say things have really de-escalated. You know, we got what we wanted. We got the easement denied. That was the goal all along. We got the process of the environmental impact statement going. That was what the goal was. So, yeah, things are very de-escalated. At the same time, the movement needs to continue to grow. We still need to keep this momentum because we're going into an administration that is going to try and complete this project. We know Donald Trump supports this pipeline. So while right now we have a time to rest and continue to strategize and, you know, gather our strength and maybe carry out the movement in other places and continue to build momentum, we still have to be vigilant and focused on what we do next, because things aren't going to get easier with this new administration.
That was Jade Begay with Indigenous Environmental Network. More information is at IENEarth.org. The Colorado Supreme Court this week issued a long-awaited ruling in a case involving the city of Aurora's municipal use and storage of water diverted from the headwaters of the Frying Pan River through a tunnel to the Front Range. News director Gavin Dahl spoke to Brent Gardner-Smith from Aspen Journalism about his story for this week's news brief.
Brent Gardner-Smith from Aspen Journalism has a brand new story out this week called West Slope Water Interests Prevail at Supreme Court. Thanks for speaking to KDNK, Brent.
Oh, you're welcome.
I knew when I saw this headline that I needed to get you on the phone to explain it. How often does the Western Slope win at court on water?
That's a good question in the sense of how do you define Western Slope, I guess. In this case, it was a pretty broad array of Western Slope interest. So there is no formal Western Slope, but it was a pretty good lineup of Western Slope interest against a long lineup of Front Range water supply interest, you might say. Many of them active in the case, many of them also just sort of filing friends of the court briefs. But it was a big West Slope, East Slope divide in terms of the participants in the case. We are talking about 2,400 acre-feet of water that is owned by the city of Aurora that they can divert from the upper Frying Pan River, send through the Busk-Ivanhoe Tunnel under what's commonly known as Hagerman Pass, and then send the water down to Turquoise Reservoir, which is near Leadville. They bought that water right in the mid-1980s, and it was for irrigation purposes. It was decreed for irrigation. And so they went to court in what's known as a change case to change the use of their decreed right from irrigation to municipal use. Now, the wrinkle in this case is they did that in 2009, which is 22 years after they first began using the water for municipal purposes, which they did not have a decreed right to do. That did not seem to please the court very much.
Right. The Colorado Supreme Court ruling on Monday sends this back to court, right?
It sends it back to court. As you know, as we've talked, one of the key tenets of Colorado water laws is use it or lose it. And part of that is you have to apply the water in the manner that you said you were going to do so, right? You have to put it to actual beneficial use. And under the law, if you're using that water for a purpose that is not decreed, as in municipal purposes in Aurora instead of irrigation purposes in the Arkansas Valley, then you don't get credit for those 22 years of undecreed use when trying to determine how much water you actually legally have the right to change from one use to the other. Are you with me?
Absolutely.
Okay. So if you factor in those quote-unquote 0 years of undecreed use, it would bring the average down. So when you go to change a water right, you've been diverting for 50 years. All right, let's look at a representative sampling of years, 15 years. How'd you use the water? That's how much water you actually use. That's how much you get to change to another purpose. In this case, Aurora said, okay, we admit that we didn't use the water for a decreed purpose, but we don't think it should count against us because it's a Trans Mountain diversion right. Because once it's on the east side of the Continental Divide, why should you care? It doesn't have any meaning to you anymore on the Western Slope. So Pickens County was especially interested in getting the 22 years factored in so that it could lower the likely new amount of water they could divert for municipal purposes.
Brent Gardner-Smith from Aspen Journalism. The story is called West Slope Water Interests Prevail at the Supreme Court. Any sign of what Aurora does next?
Well, they have an option to ask the Supreme Court to rehear the case, which is not exactly like an appeal because you have to ask the same judges who just spent 14 months or something looking at this to see if they want to look at it again. And after that, it's back to water court to figure out, well, how much water can they legally divert from the upper Frying Pan?
So Pickens County has spent over $350,000 on this process. There are a lot of water attorneys on all sides of this issue getting a payday from these continued battles. I just want to reiterate for listeners, Brent Gardner-Smith, not a water attorney, right?
Definitely not, but he plays one on the radio.
Thanks so much. Brent Gardner-Smith from Aspen Journalism. The story is West Slope Water Interests Prevail at Supreme Court. Thanks for speaking to Katie and Kay.
Thank you, Gavin.
While some people defend racist comments as just joking, a new survey says school has become more difficult for children in Colorado and across the nation. Eric Galatis has more.
This year's presidential election has had a big impact on the nation's schools, grades K through 12. According to a new national survey of educators by the Southern Poverty Law Center, student anxiety and incidents of harassment are on the rise. Maureen Costello with the center says 90% of respondents said the election has negatively affected their schools, and many reported disturbing behavior.
A lot of use of the N-word, Confederate flags. We've heard of Nazi salutes, swastikas, and Heil Trump. It just seems that the kind of civil behavior that we expect of students has completely broken down.
8 in 10 educators surveyed said immigrant, Muslim, and African-American students, as well as those who identify as LGBT, experience the greatest anxiety. Costello notes the small percentage of schools reporting little impact are predominantly white or have a history of developing welcoming, inclusive communities and programs that encourage empathy and compassion. Costello adds children who are anxious have a harder time learning, and she says parents can help address their concerns.
Parents, I think, should, first of all, engage with their children and listen to them. So it's not just how a school today, but, hey, I've heard about this. Is this happening at your school?
The report's recommendations for school leaders include making public statements to affirm school values and set expectations about inclusion and respect, identifying students who are being targeted or whose emotional needs seem to have changed, and doubling down on anti-bullying strategies.
It's sometimes hard to stand up to bullying or to stand up to nasty things being said, but you don't actually have to. What you just have to do is go over to the target, engage them in conversation, and show that, you know, you're their friend.
Over 10,000 teachers, counselors, and other school workers responded to the post-election survey. That's up from 2,000 who took part in a similar poll in March, when teachers overwhelmingly named the source of both student anxiety and bad behavior as Donald Trump. For KDNK, I'm Eric Galatis.
Great Outdoors Colorado awarded more than $13 million in grants to communities across the state to encourage young people to get outside, as Benta Berkland reports, as part of a new initiative.
The new Inspire initiative was launched last year with 6 pilot projects. It's aimed at addressing the national problem of less unstructured outdoor play. The goal is to get children to appreciate, enjoy, and take care of the great outdoors. Katie Baldazar is with the nonprofit Get Outdoors Leadville, which is one of the communities receiving money. Even though Leadville is in the heart of the mountains, she says many young people don't access the outdoors.
We mapped addresses of our school children, and we saw that 45% of them lived in one of our outlying trailer parks. They're too far to walk or bike to those natural areas.
Leadville is using part of the $3 million to put up bilingual signs at outdoor spaces and work with mobile home park owners to build natural playgrounds. Communities had to raise matching local funds. Lamar, the San Luis Valley, Denver, and Lafayette are some of the other winners. More grants will go out next year. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.